The next morning, as Pearlie loaded Woodrow on the buckboard, Smoke gave him a telegram to send to Sally's family in New Hampshire, telling him that she would be there within 2 weeks or so, depending on the weather and the state of the railroad tracks. After Pearlie left, with Hank riding in the back with the wounded man, Smoke called the hands together.
"Men, Sally's in the cabin packing now, and in a little while, I'm going to take her over to where she can catch a train back east to see her folks. After I leave, I want you all to keep a skeleton crew on the horse and cattle herds. Just enough men to keep them safe and protected. I want the rest of you scattered along the various trails that anyone could use to get to Sugarloaf."
"You expecting more trouble, Mr. Smoke?"
"Yeah. Some lowlife gunslick I took down a few years back is out to pay me back. I figure he'll have to have plenty of help before he gets the courage to come up here and face me. So I want you men to cover all the places on the trails where one or two men can keep a large party from passing. Most of you know this country about as well as I do, and there are plenty of passes and tight spots where you can bottle up those flatlanders so they can't get up here to do any mischief."
"What are you going to be doing, boss?"
"I'm going to let it be known around the territory that I've gone up into the high country for a while to visit some of my old mountain man friends. That way, hopefully, all the action will be away from here, and you all be safe."
"The hell with being safe? You need any help, boss? All you gotta do is ask."
"I know, but I can get those scum to come after me in the up high. They're the ones who'll be needing help. Thanks for your loyalty and your help. Now, I'd better be getting in the cabin and helping Sally pack, or I won't have to worry about it. She'll kill me."
Smoke went into the cabin and found Sally filling a steamer trunk, tears running down her face.
"Sweetheart, what's the matter?"
"I don't like to be away from you. You always seem to get into trouble when I'm gone. Of course, you also always seem to get into mischief when I'm here. It's a good thing I love you so much, Smoke, because you sure need a lot of taking care of."
"But worth it, right?"
"Oh, yes."
As they approached Big Rock in the buckboard, Smoke made sure Sally was prepared.
"Have you got your short-barreled .44 handy?"
"Why, are you expecting more trouble this morning?"
"Well, like I told you, one of the first and strongest lessons Preacher taught me was that if you always expect trouble, it never surprises you when it comes, as it usually does sooner or later in this country."
Sally smiled as she put the .44 away in her handbag.
"You think about Preacher often, don't you?"
"Every day. You know, it's funny, but even as civilized as we've become here, with towns and railroads and people all over the place, not a day goes by that I don't use one of the lessons the Preacher taught me about survival in the wilderness."
Perhaps we're not as civilized as you think we are, Smoke. Most of the people out here are just one generation away from frontier folk like Preacher who settled this country in the first place."
"Yeah, and some are less than one generation up from the animals that preceded the mountain men."
"Oh, so now you're insulting the grizzlies and wolves, huh?"
The buckboard pulled into the main street of Big Rock. Smoke pulled the wagon up in front of the Emporium so Sally could stock up on some female essentials she said she needed for the train trip. He left her to her shopping and ambled down the street to the saloon owned by Lewis Longmont, his gambler friend of many years. There, Lewis plied his trade, which he called teaching amateurs the laws of chance. Lewis looked up from his breakfast table and smiled as Smoke entered his saloon.
"Smoke, my old friend, have a seat and let Andre fix you something to chase the pangs of hunger away."
Smoke flipped his hat onto a rack next to the door and sat at Lewis's table, narrowing his eyes at what was before him on his plate.
"Good morning, Lewis. Just what is that you're fixing to eat?"
"It is called Eggs Benedict, and it is truly magnifique."
"I don't think so, Lewis. If your fancy French chef Andre can remember how to make some bacon and plain old hen eggs and fried taters, I'd appreciate it."
"Aw, Smoke, at least try these Eggs Benedict. They are to die for."
"I'd just soon as live, if you don't mind. Just have him pour a little sweet cream in with the eggs and scramble them up. That'll do me just fine."
"All right, then. How about some café au lait?"
"If that's coffee, I'll have about a gallon."
"Late night last night?"
"I had a little excitement up at the Sugarloaf last night."
"Oh?"
"Yeah. Seems four bushwhackers thought they was good enough to take on Sally and Hans. Had them pinned down for a while till I showed up.
All dead, I presume?
Of course. What'd you expect?
Nothing less, my friend. Are you aware of the reasoning behind the cowardly attack?
Smoke filled Lewis in on what he had heard and who he suspected was behind the various attacks on him recently, and of his plan to send Sally to New Hampshire to see her folks.
And I'd like you to spread the word to the patrons of your establishment that I've gone to the high country for a visit with some old mountain men friends up there.
Well, certainly, Smoke. But wouldn't you like another pair of colts to help you when Sundance finally comes for you? Knowing his character, or complete lack thereof, as we both do, I'm certain he's going to come with lots of company.
No thanks, Lewis. I appreciate the offer, but the more men he brings up into my country, the worse off he'll be. Easier to sow confusion and doubt when there's crowd.
Yes, I understand your strategy. Still, someone to watch your back might not be inappropriate.
Things must be awfully slow around here. You sound bored to me, Lewis.
Well, now that you mention it, there has been a notable lack of excitement in Big Rock lately. I'm afraid that word has gotten out that this is Smoke Jensen's town, and the rowdier element bypasses us for more suitable entertainment. Hell, I may have to move to a livelier town before dry rot sets in. I haven't drawn my gun in anger in several months. I'm afraid I'm getting out of practice.
Shit!
Smoke and Lewis bolted out the door together. Sally was standing in front of the store, holding her short-barreled .44 in front of her. One sleeve of her shirt was torn, and a man lay doubled over the hitching post, blood dripping from a hole between his eyes and out the enormous gap in the back of his head. And four other men were standing arrayed around her, hands near their guns. Smoke Lewis and Sheriff Monty Carson, carrying a sawed-off shotgun, arrived at the same time.
What happened, Sally?
This fellow saw me carrying some packages out of the Emporium and thought if he offered to help, that gave him other rights, too.
She killed our friend! He wasn't doing nothing, just being friendly, that's all! Now she's gonna get a whooping.
Oh? And just which one of you thinks he's man enough to do that?
I figure I'm man enough. I see you're wearing a mighty fancy shooting rig, but I'm wondering just how good you are with your fists.
Did any of these men bother you?
No. But the tall one out there was encouraging the other one to show me what a real man is like. As if he knew.
Oh! Hey, wait a minute! She started it!
Okay. Fine.
Smoke took his gun belt off and handed it to Lewis. He stepped into the street and waved the man toward him.
What rules you want to fight by?
Rules? I promise to quit hitting you after you're dead. That's the only rule I fight by.
Emma! Fucking touch! Fucking bleed! Again! You piece of shit! You got me!
Well, I'll be goddamn, Smoke.
You boys have a pleasant day.
Smoke helped Sally up into the buckboard, and they rode out of Big Rock with a wave.
Monty? Would you care to join me for a drink?
Sure would, Lewis. All this excitement has given me a powerful dry. I need to wet.
Sheriff, you ever seen anyone with hands as fast as Smoke's?
Nope. He's faster than a hound dog going after a bone, all right. Main difference is, though, that old mountain dog is all bite and no bark.
Sundance stood on a small knoll near the grove of cottonwoods he had designated as a meeting place for his lieutenants and their men. They arrived an hour before and were now drinking coffee by the gallon, most of them trying without much success to sober up and get rid of their hangovers. El Gato brought 12 men with him, all pistoleros, with no Anglos among them. He was most proud of Carlito Suarez, a man he called Perro Muerte, the Hound of Death. Suarez, according to El Gato, had killed so many men he could not keep track of them on his fingers and toes. He carried two pistols, each face and butt forward, and the usual crossed bandoliers holding spare cartridges. And he had an ancient 73 Winchester slung over his shoulder that looked as if it had seen better days. He was said to be able to knock the eye out of an eagle in flight with the rifle. The remainder of El Gato's men were the usual assortment of scruffy-looking Mexican bandito types. Heavy mustaches that drooped low, uncut scraggly hair and beards, and a smell of onions and unwashed flesh that made Sundance's nose curl when they came upwind of him. Toothpick brought 10 men with him. They were a mixed bunch, mostly Anglos with a few Mexicans thrown in. They were all hard cases, and Sundance recognized several faces from wanted posters he had seen around towns in South Texas. One-Eyed Jordan, wearing a patch over his left eye, was wanted for robbery, rape, and murder in at least 4 towns that Sundance knew of. He wore only one gun, but he was reputed to be as quick as a rattlesnake with it, just as likely as the dreaded serpent to strike without provocation. It was said he lost his eye in a fight, gouged out by his opponent's thumb. Jordan, according to local legend, had bitten the man's thumb off and swallowed it before killing him. Another of Toothpick's gang was Curly Bill Cartwright. This angelic-faced kid was no more than 18 years old and looked only 14. He was, however, a stone-cold killer, whose pretty face was inhabited by eyes as dead as dirt, and the same color, too. He was reputed to kill without mercy, and can use a knife as well as a pistol. One of his Mexicans was called Chiva, which Sundance didn't understand. The word Chiva was like cabrón, one of the worst insults you could give a Mexican. He later learned it meant not only cuckold, but also scurrilous outlaw or thoroughly bad hombre. Chiva was all of that. He had a scar from ear to ear and was said to have choked to death with his bare hands the man who gave it to him after the gent had cut his throat. He never smiled and he rarely talked, just sat there constantly with his knife blade on an old whetstone. Sundance could see why he and Toothpick had teamed up together. Lightning Jack Warner brought 14 men, all Anglos and all sporting distinctly Southern accents. Several still wore parts of Confederate Army uniforms and smelled as if they hadn't bathed or washed their clothes since the end of the war. These men eyed the Mexicans nervously and acted as if they would rather fight them than make some money. One of his men, simply called Bull, was one of the biggest, wildest men Sundance had ever seen. He made even El Gato seem small. He rode a horse that must have been 17 hands and looked like a pony between his legs. His hands were so big it was hard for him to handle a 6-gun. His fingers wouldn't fit in the trigger guard. He carried a pair of 12-gauge shotguns cut down to 14 inches long. He wore a homemade rig for his converted shotguns with 2 holsters fitted to a belt like scabbards for pistols. It was said that he was as fast with his scatter guns as most men were with Colts. He made his own loads for the shells out of wire, glass, and cut off heads of horseshoe nails. His effective range was only about 20 yards, but it was a rare man who could hit the side of a barn with a Colt at a greater distance. His friends bragged that anything Bull shot at, he hit, and anything Bull hit, he killed. He was known to have been wounded 11 times, 3 in one battle, and had never gone down from his injuries. Either too mean or just too stupid to die.
Compadres and partners, I don't know what the men who brought you here told you, but if you ride with me, you will either become rich or you'll die. Together we can form the most feared gang the West has ever seen. We can rob and pillage and steal anything we want. We can go wherever we want, and no town, no marshal, no sheriff can stand against us. For every man we lose in battle, we'll have 2 more who want to join the Sundance Morgan gang. We'll move fast and strike hard. No one will be safe, and nobody will know where we're going to hit next. We'll split the proceeds of every job equally among us. Even though I will plan the jobs and our raids, I will take no more than anyone else. We are all equals when money is concerned. On this, there could be no disagreement, however. I'll be the boss and I'll call the shots. Where we go, who we hit, and when we leave camp. Are there any questions about that?
One of the pistoleros who had come into camp with El Gato came to his feet.
Yeah, I got a question. Why should we, los pistoleros, take orders from un gabacho?
Excuse me, but what does gabacho mean?
It is not a nice word for gringo, my friend.
What do you call a dead Mexican? The same thing you call a dead American. A fucking corpse. We are all compadres here. We are all companeros. We are all partners. There is no race or religion in this game. We will fight together, whore together, and live or die together. Anyone who can't live with that can leave now or be killed later. It's your choice.
A few of Lightning Jack's Southerners got on their mounts and rode off silently. And a couple of Mexicans took their horses and went toward the Rio Bravo just beyond the trees. Overall, Sundance thought, he now had a gang of better than 30 of the meanest, lowest, and most deadly men in the state of Texas riding with him. He aimed his pistol at a grove of trees nearby.
Over there, I've got 2 cases of tequila and 2 cases of whiskey. What say we have a few drinks to settle our partnership and help cut the trail dust?
It was almost sundown by the time Smoke and Sally made it to the small station on the Rocky Mountain Line Railroad tracks that served as the closest point to Sugarloaf where they could board an eastbound train. The station consisted of a small one-room cabin and loading platform, with a pole to hang a lantern on to signal the engineer to stop. Smoke lit the lantern, hung it on the pole, and settled back to await the train's arrival.
I'm going to miss you, Smoke.
I'm going to miss you too, honey. But I tell you this, the boys are going to miss you almost as much. Cookie just doesn't know his way around a kitchen nearly as well as you do. They'll all probably lose weight while you're gone.
Oh, so it's just my cooking you're going to miss, huh?
Now, you know that's not true. I value your cleaning and washing just as much as your cooking. I won't hardly have any clean clothes by the time you get back.
You keep talking like that, and I may just decide not to return to my old mountain man at all, Smoke Jensen.
Smoke and Sally hugged each other tightly. The remaining time until the train arrived was spent saying those things that a man and woman who are deeply in love say to one another when they're about to be separated for a lengthy time. Finally, as the sun was sinking below the mountains to the west, a locomotive chugged toward the tiny station and pulled to a stop. Smoke loaded Sally's luggage into the baggage car, then helped her up the steps and to a seat in the passenger section. A final kiss, quick caress of her face, and he was gone. In typical mountain man fashion, Smoke didn't watch the train as it took his beloved far away. He put her and that tender part of his life out of his mind and concentrated on the task before him, luring Sundance into the mountains and dealing with him in his usual manner, as harshly as he knew how. He drove the buckboard toward peaks to the north. After driving roughly 10 miles, he unhitched and ground-reined the 2 horses, made a small cold camp, and ate his supper of jerked beef, cold biscuits, and a small sip of whiskey to wash it down. He rolled 1 cigarette while lying on his back, gazing at the stars, then he dropped off to sleep. He wanted to get an early start at dawn. As the sun peeked over the mountains and began to burn off the early morning fog, Pearly stretched and scratched. Padding over to the stove in the center of the bunkhouse, Pearly started a fire to get some coffee heating. While combing his unruly hair, he noticed in the mirror that Cal's bed was empty.
Oh, ain't like that boy to be first out of his bunk.
Cal was just putting his boot in his stirrup when Pearly came out of the bunkhouse.
Whoa there, Cal. Just back on out of that saddle and tell me what you figure you're doing.
Well, I'm going for a ride.
Well, I can see that, boy. I ain't blind. Where are you aiming on riding to, and why are you taking off before breakfast?
I'm just going up onto the hills around the ranch to look around a bit.
Pearly walked up to Cal's horse, a small buckskin palouse with blood-red spots on its rump. He ran his hand over the .22 rifle in the saddle boot and over a bedroll and full saddlebags behind the cantle.
Uh-huh. And I'm gonna go on a diet, too. What's going on, young'un? And don't you try and feed your Uncle Pearly any bull splat, neither.
I'm planning on riding up into those mountains and helping Smoke out when those banditos come up after him.
You figure that pea shooter and that little 36 caliber Navy Colt you're sporting is gonna help the big man?
You're damn right, Pearly. Maybe I don't carry the biggest artillery in the territory, but I can damn sure hit what I aim at, and that's what counts in a gunfight.
Oh? And how do you know what counts in a gunfight?
Because that's what Smoke told me what counts.
Well, it don't matter none nohow, because I can't let you go. Smoke said we was to hang here at the ranch and make sure the beeves and horses are all right.
Well, it doesn't matter, and I'm damn sure going.
No, you're not. Not as long as you work for this spread, and not as long as I'm Ramrod.
Then I quit. Because I don't intend for Smoke to fight a gang of hard cases all by himself.
Okay. Now, just wait a minute. Let me think. Okay, Cal, here's the deal. I'm going to get you a rifle that'll do more than just piss those polecats off. And then we're going to get supplied up plenty good, and we're both going to go up in the high country and look for Smoke.
Pearly held up his palm to halt Cal's ear-to-ear grin.
Now, hold on there. Unless I miss my guess, when we find Smoke, he's gonna kick your butt all over them mountains and send us right back down here. But I'm gonna give you a chance to talk him into letting us lend him a hand.
Great. Then let's shag the trail. We're burning daylight.
Whoa there, Bronco. First, I gotta eat. Then I gotta get my horse saddled and get Cookie to fix us up with some victuals for the trail. Then we gotta get you a man's gun for that saddle boot. I figure we got an old Winchester 73 around here. It shoots .44, so you'll have to carry double ammunition since you can't use those .36s your little pea shooter needs.
That's okay. You go get Cookie to get your breakfast, and I'll pack your horse and get the rifle and extra ammunition out of the tack room, and we'll be ready to get going as soon as you finish stuffing your face.
Pearly just shook his head as he walked over toward the main cabin to get Cookie started on breakfast and their provisions. Sundance lay on his belly in the moonlight on a small bluff overlooking a Mexican hacienda. He and his lieutenants, Toothpick, El Gato, and Lightning Jack, had decided to strike one of the rich Mexican ranches near the border for their first target. Sundance explained that this was important for two reasons. First, the American authorities were notoriously lax in prosecuting crimes that occurred in Mexico. And second, he wanted to test his gang in an area where there was likely to be only token resistance. El Gato told Sundance that he knew of such a place. A distant cousin of his, Enrique Hernandez, owned a fine spread a few miles from Laredo. Since the outbreak of fever in the cattle of the region, Hernandez had let most of his vaqueros go in order to conserve his cash until such time as healthy beeves could be bought to replenish his herd.
Why would you want to hit one of your relatives, El Gato?
The filthy bastardo! He turned his back when El Gato asked for help. Federales wanted to hang El Gato, so I asked Senor Hernandez to hide me. He refused. Call me, you say in English, garbage!
Is he wealthy?
That cabron has more money than El Presidente de Mexico. And he does not even give monies to church.
And you, my friend, do you give money to the church?
Me? I am but a poor peon. God made church to help peons. When I come to a Casa de Dios, it's to take monies from poor box. It's what it's for.
But what about Hernandez? I don't want to rob his place and end up with a handful of paper pesos.
No, El Patron does not deal in paper monies. He keeps oro at his hacienda because that is what required by Americano cattle buyers and sailors.
Gold? Well, like I always said, it's easier to liberate gold from a man's poke than it is to dig it out of the ground. Let's go for it.
It was almost midnight as the moon reached its zenith over the northern Mexican desert. The sky was clear, and the moonlight reflecting off the sand made the night as bright as day. Sundance lay on the parched caliche of the bluff, which was still warm from the scorching daylight sun, even though the air was chilly. He was peering through his binoculars at Hernandez's ranch below.
I don't see no lights nor any activity. It doesn't appear to have any guards out.
The old man thinks he's safe because he's far from town.
Sundance got to his feet, brushing dirt off his pants and elbows.
Okay, this is it then. A guide will take your men to the bunkhouse and have them ready to bust in on my signal. Lightning Jack and the rest of the men will surround the house in case any of the family wants to make a stand there.
What are you going to be doing, boss?
Me? Why, Toothpick and me are going into the house and see if Senior Hernandez won't agree to make a donation to the Sundance Morgan gang.
Then if they don't...
Then me and Baby here will have a talk with him.
After his men were positioned, Sundance and Toothpick walked their horses up to the front of the hacienda and dismounted. They tried the door, but it wouldn't open. Toothpick inserted his blade into the door jamb and gently lifted, raising a wooden bar blocking their way. Easing into the house, they began to search it room by room, aided by the moonlight streaming through windows. They found three young males looking like they ranged in age from 12 to 18, and two females of about 13 and 16 sleeping soundly in their beds. Taking several pistols from the bedrooms, they continued their search until they came to the master bedroom. Hernandez and his wife were asleep, covered only by a light sheet, curtains billowing in the gentle night breeze. Hernandez appeared to be in his early 50s, while his wife looked to be no more than 40. Toothpick used the point of his knife to gently pull the sheet down, revealing a full-figured woman clad only in a sheer nightshirt. He licked his lips and grinned at Sundance, raising his eyebrows. Sundance put the barrel of his Colt against Hernandez's temple, thumb back the hammer. Sundance drew back and rapped him sharply in the face with the gun. His wife opened her mouth, but gasped and swallowed her scream when Toothpick stuck the point of his blade against her throat, drawing a small drop of blood which rolled slowly down her neck. The crimson liquid appeared black against her pale skin in the moonlight.
What do you gringos want?
First of all, we're not gringos, we're outlaws, and we want your gold.
I have no gold. You must be mistaken.
Oh. Then I guess we'll just be on our way. Of course, if there's no gold for my compadres, they're probably gonna be very angry. I may have to let them amuse themselves some other way, just to keep them in line.
Bastardos! My vaqueros will cut you to pieces if you harm anyone in this house.
Oh, yes. I almost forgot about your men.
Sundance, keeping his pistol trained at Hernandez, walked to the window and pulled back the curtains.
Okay, boys!
El Gato and Lightning Jack sauntered in as Sundance was moving Hernandez and his wife out of bed.
The men are all taken care of, boss. How y'all doing in here?
We got a small problem here, Lightning. Senior Hernandez says he don't have no gold.
No gold? Bastardo!
No! No, please! Stop it!
Shut your mouth, you fucking whore!
Viejo! ¿Dónde está el oro?
Chingale, animale!
Toothpick!
If you don't start talking, I'm gonna fuck your wife with the pointy end of my little friend here.
See? You win. If I tell you where the gold is, will you let my family leave?
No, I gotta be honest with you, Senior Hernandez. But I will give them a quick and painless death. That's about all you can hope for at this point after lying to us about the gold and all.
The gold is in the chest in the bedroom under some blankets.
What are you doing?
Elgato, check it out.
After a moment, Elgato returned, dragging behind him a chest that was heavy enough to leave gouge marks in the tile floor.
Senior Sundance, I think we're very, very rich now.
Sundance smiled a kind smile. Then drew his pistol and put the barrel against Hernandez's forehead.
Oh, by the way, since you weren't the one who told me what I wanted to know, you can go to heaven knowing that I'm gonna fuck your wife till she can't take it anymore, then I'm gonna give her to my men. All right, boys, do me a favor. Go find those little cockroaches they call children and put some bullets in the boys and some dick in the girls. I'm gonna have me some fun with this bitch. Come here!
The sun was just kissing the tops of the western peaks of the Rockies when Pearlie held his hand up.
Well, it's about time to fix us a camp and let the horses blow. The air's pretty thin up here, and there's no need to overdo it on our first day.
Pearlie, we got another hour before dark yet. We can get another few miles if we keep on going.
Cal, you don't know squat about traveling in the high country. First of all, night comes quick in the up high, a lot faster than you think. Second, it takes time to get a camp ready, and that's no fun in the dark. There's wood for the fire to gather, water to get to boiling for coffee, and since we neglected to take a proper nooning, I've got a powerful hunger on.
But...
Yeah, no buts, boy. This time of year, it's going to get mighty near freezing up here, and I don't intend to turn into no icicle just so as we can get to smoke a little sooner. So you'll listen to someone who knows just a mite more than you do about traveling and camping in the mountains.
Pearlie slid off his horse and tied the reins to a small bush near good grass so the horse could graze a while.
You go gather up some wood. Dry, not too green. And I'll arrange a few rocks and build us a campfire that'll work to cook us some dinner and keep us from freezing tonight. Hell, maybe it'll even keep grizzlies and wolves from eating us while we sleep.
After they got the fire burning, and Pearlie sliced and fried some pork fat back and beans and made a pot of coffee and a batch of pan bread, the pair hobbled the horses to stay near camp and settled into their bedrolls in front of the fire.
Pearlie?
Yeah, kid?
How much do you know about Smoke's past?
Why? You figuring to write one of them penny dreadfuls like those tenderfeet back east are always doing?
No, nothing like that. It's just... Ever since Smoke and Miss Sally took me on as a hand, I've been hearing stories that's hard to believe. Things like he's killed over 200 men and all. I was just wondering how much of that's true, is all.
Boy, you can take anything you hear about Smoke Jensen and double it, and you might be close to the truth. That hombre is a full 16 hands high, and that's no exaggeration.
Well, I'm not near sleepy yet. How about you tell me what you know about him?
Okay, move that R buckles off the fire so it don't get bitter and let me get another butt going and I'll tell you what I know.
So it don't get bitter? Hell, I almost had to cut it out of a cup with my knife to drink it.
Boy, that's real mountain man coffee. If you're gonna run with the big dogs, you gotta be prepared to eat and drink the way they do. Now, pour me another swig or two and settle back in your covers for the damnedest tale you've ever heard. A few years back, I was in the employ of a man who made the biggest mistake of his life. He decided to go up against Smoke Jensen. After a while, I found I couldn't stomach the things that man was asking me to do, so I switched sides and joined up with Smoke and his friends.
You mean Smoke let you come over to his side after you've been against him?
Yep. Matter of fact, it was Smoke's idea in the first place. He asked me if and I was happy working for a scumbag like Franklin. When I said I wasn't, he said he always had room on his payroll for a good worker. So I packed my war bag and left the same day.
What happened then? Was your previous boss mad about you leaving and all?
Oh, you bet your boots he was plenty pissed at me. He sent a group of the men riding for his brand after me, and they shot me up a little bit, then dragged me to hell and back through cactus and rocks and such. Well, Smoke had Doc Spaulding yanked those lead peas out of my hide, and then put me in a boarding house in Big Rock to give me some time to heal. That's when I first met Lewis Longmont, a longtime compadre of Smoke's.
You mean that dandy gambling fella that owns a saloon in Big Rock?
One and the same, though he's no dandy. He's might near the fastest man with a shotgun I ever seen. Except for Smoke, of course. Anyway, he admired the way I stood up to Franklin and took to visiting me every day, and we'd kind of get to talking, mostly about Smoke. Seems he was pretty close friends with Preacher and knew Smoke when he came out west, when he was just a youngin. These stories I'm about to relate to you are the same ones he told me. Smoke's dad, Emmett, came back from the war between the states in the summer of 1865, when Smoke, who was known as Kirby then, was only about 14 or 15 years old. Emmett sold their scratch dirt farm in Missouri, packed up their belongings, and they headed north by northwest.
Why'd they do that?
That'll become clear later in the story. But Smoke's dad didn't even tell them why they were going west at that time. Anyway, long about Wichita, they met up with an old mountain man who called himself Preacher. For some reason, unknown even to the old-timer, he took them under his wing when he saw they was as green as new apples, and they traveled together for a spell. Soon they was set upon by a band of Pawnee Indians, and Smoke killed his first couple of men. Longmont says that Preacher told him he couldn't hardly believe it when he saw Smoke draw that old Navy Colt. Says he knew right off Smoke was destined to become a legend, if and he lived long enough, that is. And that's when Preacher gave young Kirby Jensen his nickname, Smoke, from the smoke that came out of that Navy Colt. Now, right after that, Emmett told Preacher that he had set out looking for three men who killed Smoke's brother and stole some Confederate gold. Their names was Wiley Potter, Josh Richards, and Stratton. I don't remember his first name. Emmett went on to tell Preacher that he was going gunning for these polecats, and if he didn't come back, he wanted Preacher to take care of Smoke till he was growed up enough to do it for himself. Preacher told Emmett he'd be proud to do that very thing. Now, the next day, Emmett took off and left the old cougar to watch after his young'un. They didn't hear nothing for a couple of years. Time Preacher spent teaching the young buck the ways of the West and how to survive where most men wouldn't. Longmont says Preacher told him that during that time, though Smoke was about as natural a fast draw and shot as he'd ever seen, the boy spent at least an hour every day drawing and dry firing those Navy Colts he wore.
Wait a minute. I thought Smoke only had one Colt. Where'd he get the other one?
Oh, I forgot. That first Pawnee brave he killed was carrying one, and naturally Smoke claimed it for his own. That's when he started wearing two guns in that special way he has, with the left'un butt forward and the right'un butt backwards. That's also where he got that big old sticker he carries in his belt scabbard. And quit interrupting me if you want to hear this story. About 2 years later, at Brown's Hole in Idaho, an old mountain man found Smoke and Preacher and told Smoke his daddy was dead, that those men he went after killed him. Smoke packed up and he and Preacher went out on the prod. They got to Pagosa Springs, that's Injun for healing waters, just west of the Needle Mountains, and stopped to replenish their supplies. They rode into Rico, a rough-and-tumble mining camp that back then was an outlaw hangout.
Pearly's story went on long into the night and chronicled the details of Smoke Jensen's first real shootout. He embellished some of the details, though not many, because Smoke's story was already amazing enough. And when Pearly finished, Cal sat there with his jaw agape.
How old was he when this happened?
Well, I don't know. About 18 or so, I guess.
Jiminy Christmas! That's only a couple years older than me.
Yeah, only Smoke was 18 going on 30, while you're 16 going on 10.
Ah, Pearly, it's not fair. I'm pretty good with my irons. You said so yourself.
No offense meant, kid. Just be glad you ain't never had to kill nobody. It ain't hardly never nothing to be proud of. You heard how Smoke tried to get those men to back down? He never goes out looking for blood. It just seems to find him more than most people.
Pearly turned over and pulled his blanket up over his head.
Now, that's enough stories for one night. Let's get some shut-eye. Dawn's gonna come earlier than you think, and we got to get on the trail early if and we're ever gonna catch up with Smoke.
Okay, but if and we don't catch him by tomorrow night, will you tell me some more about Smoke when he was first starting out?
Yeah. Now, go to sleep.
Smoke smelled a fire long before he could see evidence of it. He stepped out of the saddle and tied his horse and pack horse to a bush where they could graze.
Time to get down and dirty.
He pulled his Henry rifle out of the saddle boot and loosened rawhide hammer thongs on his Colts, then began to creep up mountain through thick underbrush toward the fire. He knew it was much too soon to worry about Sundance and his gang. But in the High Lonesome, your enemies weren't necessarily known to you. As Preacher had told him on more than one occasion, strangers are always hostile unless you know both their first and last names. Slowly, he came close to a small clearing and peered from behind a ponderosa pine at the camp, a rough-hewn log cabin of one room sitting in the trees. A paint pony grazed nearby, enjoying lush green mountain meadow grass. There was a fire going in front of the shack with coffee heated on a trestle and a deer haunch roasting on a spit. Smoke relaxed when he saw the horse, straightened up and walked into the clearing.
Yo, the cabin! Can I join you?
Smoke felt the barrel of a rifle touch his neck just seconds after his sixth sense warned him of someone's approach from behind.
Hee hee hee! Thought you was gonna sneak up on old Puma, huh, boy?
Please, don't shoot me, Mr. Mountain Man. I'm just a poor pilgrim who's lost his way in the woods.
Smoke turned and smiled.
Puma Buck, you old cougar. You get uglier every time I see you. And that cayuse has got to be 20 years old if it's a day.
Smoke, Jensen, I thought old Preacher taught you better trail smarts than that. Hell, I heard you coming nearly an hour ago. That's why I put that there deer on the cook.
Mighty hard to keep in practice tracking when you live around civilization, Puma. Matter of fact, a body can forget plenty of important lessons if he stays away from the up high too long.
Puma nodded and threw his arm around Smoke's shoulder, leading him over to the fire.
That's true, boy. That's surely true. Being around people just purely sucks the smarts right out of man. Come on, light and set and let me pour you some coffee.
Smoke squatted and held out a tin cup he found near the fire. After Puma filled it, he took a drink.
Yeah, I've missed your cooking, Puma. Been a long time since I had coffee that flowed a horseshoe.
Taking a long time to cook just right. Guess you civilized folks don't ever take the time to do it right. I've been working on that pot for a mite near 3 days now. It's just about ripe. Maybe another day or two.
After supper, Smoke trotted back to retrieve his horses and returned to the cabin.
Smells like snow's on the way. Seems to come earlier and colder every year.
That's just because you're older than dirt, Puma. You're getting mighty long in the tooth to winter up here. Maybe it's time for you to winter in the desert, where the cold don't make your bones as brittle as dead wood.
Puma snorted and ambled into his cabin, returning after a moment with 3 half-cured bearskin blankets. He threw one over his paint pony and handed the other one to Smoke.
Whew. Puma, you done forgot how to cure skins? This bear's about as ripe as you are.
Oh, that's what's wrong with you city folk. You bathe too much. That's how I knowed you's a-coming. I smelt soap on you from 3 miles off and me being upwind.
I brought some extra if and you care to try it.
Hell no. I bathed in the spring. Don't want to overdo it. Might get sick and die. Then who'd be here to teach you the things you done forgot about wilderness living?
Yeah, Preacher always washed 2, maybe 3 times a year.
Yeah, Preacher did get a mite too civilized in his old age. I heard in his later years he killed a couple old boys and didn't even take their hair. Don't do to get too soft up here or folks will take advantage of you.
Hey, Puma, you think Preacher is still alive?
I expect so, boy. There's still beaver in them ponds, and grizzlies still look over their shoulders for him and fear when they hunt. The old Preacher ain't about to cross over while there's still game to be had or grizzlies to wrestle. By the by, speaking of old warriors, I heard you's coming up here to put the war paint on.
Yeah, that's so. A fella backshot a friend of mine a few years back. I took his ear and sent him on his way with a couple of ounces of lead in his hide. Now he thinks it's time I paid the fiddler for that little dance.
Shoulda taken his hair, hoss. Then you wouldn't have to be watching your back trail. Man makes himself enough enemies just living without having to go out and try and make some more.
I guess so. Preacher told me don't never leave a man alive with lead in him. Just makes him want to heal up and give it back to you when you least expect it.
Yeah, Preacher knew which way the stick floats, all right. Took his share of scalps, too. Both white and red. You figure on needing any help or someone to watch your back in this war you're getting ready for?
Well, Preacher always said, don't ever turn down help when it's offered.
Though I hope these old boys are like most Flatlanders and don't know nothing about the High Lonesome. I got some surprises planned for them that may make them think twice about coming after me.
Don't underestimate the strength of vengeance, Hoss. It'd be a powerful motivator for most folks. Gold, women, and blood feuds killed more men than all the wars put together. I wouldn't count on those old boys turning tail and running just because you tweaked their noses a little. You listen to an expert, boy. Don't go halfway. You get a chance, you lift some hair and count some coup, because as sure as beavers build dams, they'll do it to you if they can.
I'll do it, Puma. Now, you think we can get under that shack you call a home before my eyeballs freeze? Or are you going to stay out here till the spring thaw?
You sure be getting soft, Smoke. Good thing you came up here to relearn what Preacher and us old other mountain beavers taught you, for it's too late. Come on, we'll get covered and get some shut-eye and talk more on this war of yours at sunrise.
After a fitful night of tossing and turning, Smoke awoke before dawn and went out into the snow-covered clearing in front of the cabin. He stoked the campfire embers to life and added more wood, warming his hands in the heat from the flames. He opened his supply pack and took out breakfast makings and began to cook. A short while later, a yawning Puma buck limped out the cabin door.
Smoke, I don't know what you're cooking up over there, but it smells right good enough to eat.
Light and set, Puma. I made us some pan dulce, Mexican sweetbread. Fried some bacon and taters and opened a can of sliced peaches for dessert.
Good thing you're not up here very often, Smoke. Otherwise, old Spot there wouldn't be able to carry me around no more. I'd be so damn overfed, I'd break his back.
Sorry about the belly wash. I had to add a little water because it was so thick it wouldn't come out of the pot.
Well, I hope you ain't plumb ruined it, boy. Took a lot of cooking to get it just right.
To ease his feelings, Smoke cut a chunk of sweetbread out of the skillet and handed the sugary cake to the old man. The pair ate in amiable silence, enjoying the majestic views of mountain peaks, snow-covered valleys and meadows, and white-capped ponderosa pines.
You know, Puma, every time I come up to God's country, I wonder why I ever bothered to leave and head back to the Flatlands.
Might be that sweet woman who warms your blankets more than a little to do with it.
She's a big part of it, all right. But when this little dust-up is over, I'll bring Sally up here and show her why I can't ever get this country out of my heart.
Leave it to Smoke Jensen to call a war with 40 men against him, little dust-up. Well, Hoss, this child is still kicking when that happens. I'd be honored if you and the missus would make camp with me for a spell. I promise not to tell her too many tales about you in the old days when your juices are just starting to flow.
Yours will be the first stop on our journey, Puma. Now, I gotta get busy if I'm going to get my surprises ready for that polecat and his gang before they get here. You might spread word among the others up here to walk carefully on the trails. I wouldn't want any of my friends to get hurt by my traps.
Boy, if a mountain man don't know enough to watch where he's stepping, he don't hardly deserve to be in the High Lonesome no-how.
Smoke stepped into the saddle and reined away, with only a wave over his shoulder as a farewell. Sundance Morgan sat on his mount, a cigarette stuck in a face full of stubble, and he looked out at his gang gathered before him. They had crossed the border just before dawn in small groups of five men to avoid being noticed, and now they had gathered at the same grove of cottonwoods on the Rio Bravo where they first met. The desperados were bleary-eyed and surly from a night without sleep. The Hernandez women lasted for hours, until finally Sundance ordered his men to put them out of their misery and ride north.
Hombres, we're like Los Corrientes, the wild longhorns who live in the Brasada, obeying no man's laws and answering to no one for our actions. We'll ride till midday to put some trail between us and Mexico, then find a shady place for a siesta and for our nooning. Now, andale, compadre, shag your mounts. Vámonos!
The gang rode north on the trail toward San Antonio for several hours. When the sun reached mid-sky and heat waves danced over the desolate land of the Texas bush country, they pulled off the road into a stand of live oak trees and dismounted.
Some men cooked bacon and beans, while others lay in the shade drinking whiskey and eating jerked meat. A few slumped on the dirt, snoring, hats pulled down over their eyes. Sundance took this time to call a meeting of his lieutenants to plan their next move.
Sundance, there'll be a small settlement on the coast just north of here called Corpus Christi. Not much there, but it might be worth a look or two.
No, I don't think so. I there last year. It's full of campesinos and fishermen. There's no gold in that town.
I hear there's a big spread hereabouts. King Ranch, I think it's called.
You heard right, Toothpick. Trouble is, there's a bunch of hairy old boys riding for that brand. Mainly Mexicans, but they all carry sidearms and they all know how to use them. Old man King hired him a bunch of old buffed soldiers from the Union Army after the war. And them boys ain't afraid of nothing nor nobody. A bunch of old pistoleros from down the border tried to tree that particular spread a few months back. What was left of them, about a third, I reckon, came straggling back through Del Rio with their tails between their legs looking mighty shot up.
Toothpick just shrugged and went back to eating beans.
You got a better plan then?
Yeah, Jack. The news stage from San Antonio is due to come down that trail in a couple of hours. The station where they change horses for the final leg into Laredo is about 3 miles north of here. After the boys are finished eating, I figure we'll just mosey on over the hill and be waiting on that stage when it pulls in.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm in need of a fresh mount anyhow.
Gato threw his empty bottle against a nearby tree.
Hey, mas tequila, hey, compadres.
Sundance spent a few more minutes outlining his plan for taking the stage station. Then the men were rounded up and they rode north. Catherine Johansson looked up from her cooking as she heard the door to the way station. She peered out the small serving window and saw four disreputable-looking men enter. Something about their manner alarmed her. Without haste, she slipped a Derringer 44 over and under into her apron pocket. Her husband and the station manager, Olaf Johansson, was wiping down the bar when Carlito Suarez, One-Eyed Jordan, Curly Bill Cartwright, and Bull burst through the door.
Howdy, gents. Mighty windy day out there today, huh?
Suarez grinned widely, exposing a greenish-yellow front tooth. A dentist in Monterey had told him it was gold, but it turned out to be brass. The dentist lived to regret it and died cursing the day he met Pedro Muerte.
Si, senor. The dust, she is flying pretty damn mucho today.
One-Eyed Jordan turned his head and surveyed the clabbered shack. Along one wall were homemade shelves lined with canned goods, a few bolts of cloth, and barrels of dried beans and flour.
Is here a store or a dog hole?
Well, boys, I expect it's a bit of both. If you're short of supplies, we can fix you up at fair prices. And if you're thirsty or hungry, we can do something about that, too.
The men sauntered up to the bar and leaned against it. Curly Bill smiled with his lips, but his eyes never changed.
Well, I'd like a whiskey with a beer chaser if it's not flat.
Make that two.
Johansson's lips started to curl in a smile, but the look on Bull's face stopped him cold. He shivered as if someone had walked over his grave and reluctantly let go of his shotgun to fix the men their drinks. Jordan walked to a window and glanced towards a corral behind the building. There were 8 horses grazing on hay piled on the ground.
Them the horses for the stage?
Yeah. Should be here any time now, unless they broke a wheel or something.
Olaf put the drinks on the bar in front of Bull and Cartwright.
You boys up from Laredo?
Yeah, why?
Oh, no reason. A couple of punchers came through from there earlier today and said a Mexican rancher south of there was burned out. All of his hands and family was killed, and his wife and daughter was scalped.
Yeah, awful what them greasers do to one another, ain't it?
See, he's terrible.
You say that stage is due here soon?
Johansson nodded, his hand searching under the bar for his shotgun.
You work this place all by yourself?
Yes, I'm here alone.
A lot of work for one man. And I swear I can smell pussy somewhere in this place.
Johansson started to bring the shotgun up, but faster than the eye could follow, a knife appeared in Cartwright's hand.
Yeah!
One-eyed Jordan stepped quickly into the kitchen. He came out a moment later, dragging a struggling Catherine Johansson into the room by her hair.
Hey, boys, look what I found me. A wildcat of a woman.
One Eye spun her around and grabbed her head and pulled it towards his face, trying to kiss her.
Ah, Jesus! Bitch shot my fingers off!
Catherine saw her husband on the floor.
There's my pussy!
Bull took two quick steps and slapped her backhanded. As she hit the floor, the derringer flew from her hands. Suarez bent over Jordan and pulled his hand out where he could see it. It was missing the index and middle finger and was tattooed black from the gunpowder blast. He poured tequila over the hand.
Get up, Senor One Eye. You crying like a woman, making my head hurt. I'ma kill that bitch for what she did to me.
Bull stepped in front of Catherine's limp body. He began to undo his belt.
Not just yet, you ain't. I got some business with her first.
Curly, go signal Sundance. We must clean the floor before the stage comes.
Cartwright stepped out the door and fired his pistol in the air. Then he returned to the room. He walked to Johansson's body and squatted before it, careful not to step in the blood that pooled the boards around him. Without haste, he pulled the dead man's shiny black boots off and then took him across the room to the table. He sat and removed his threadbare boots and put on the station master's newer ones. He stood and shined them on his pants legs, one at a time, admiring their sheen for a moment. Then, with a jaunty step, he pitched his old boots onto Johansson's body and dragged it out the rear door and covered it with some firewood he found there. Sundance entered the room to find Suarez throwing dirt over the bloodstains and Jordan sitting propped against a wall, rocking back and forth with his wounded hand against his stomach, swigging whiskey with the other. Cartwright was in the kitchen eating some of the food that Catherine had been preparing.
Where's Bull?
Oh, he's in the other room. Say he have a business with the lady in there.
Lord save me from galoots who think with their balls instead of their brains. Jordan, get off your ass and pull the mounts around back and out of sight. The stage will be here in a minute, and we don't have much time.
Once the blood was covered and the horses were hidden, Sundance stationed Suarez and Cartwright behind the door to the building and told Jordan to stay in the kitchen. Bull strolled in from Johansson's living quarters, fixing his pants, sweat running down his face and making rivulets in the dirt.
I always love it when they fight back. Then I feel justified when I beat the shit out of them. Oh, hey, boss, where's the rest of the boys?
I left them out of sight over that ridge yonder. I figure we got enough to do what we need right here.
What do you want me to do?
Sundance inclined his head toward the back door.
You station yourself behind the corner of the building. The stage driver will send the passengers in while he and the man riding shotgun change horses. That's your responsibility.
Bull tipped his hat and drew his shotguns as he ambled out the door. A few minutes later, the stage pulled up outside. Four passengers unloaded and headed for the station, anxious to get out of the stifling Texas heat and to stretch muscles cramped from the jolting ride. Sundance was behind the bar, wearing an apron he had liberated from the kitchen. The first person through the door was a middle-aged white man, dressed in black, carrying a brown case worn yellow in spots. He looked like a drummer to Sundance. He was followed by three women, all appearing past 40 years of age and wearing heavy makeup and brightly colored dresses with hats and carrying small parasols to ward off the sun.
Mister, ladies, how can I help you?
Whiskey, if you please, my good man.
Two of the women asked for beer and one ordered whiskey. Sundance grinned as he fixed the drinks, thinking he was the most expensive bartender these folks would ever meet.
What the hell?
The man reached inside his coat, stopping when he felt the barrel of Cartwright's Colt against his ear. Sundance raised his hands, palm out.
Settle down now, folks. Finish your drinks and nobody will get hurt.
Especially you ladies.
Suarez dropped his hands to caress their breasts.
Oh, like two fine hams shoved down the front of your dress. Oh.
A moment later, Bull walked in, wiping blood and hair off the butt of his shotgun with a dusty bandana.
That driver didn't want to die, so I helped him along a little. Weren't no need to waste a shell on him, so I just tapped him on the head. Damn near broke my stock.
One of the women sunk to the ground in a faint.
Oh, please, God, save us.
Sundance glanced at the drummer.
What's in the case?
Airtights.
He opened the case to reveal several tin cans bearing the names Meat Biscuit and Condensed Milk.
I work for the Gail Borden Company. She's trying to expand her market to the Southwest. It's really quite popular up north.
Mister, that's about the dumbest thing I ever heard. Look around, partner. There ain't nothing out here setting beeves. We got pretty near all the meat and milk we want just for the taking. Before we need beef in a can.
See, he said only a fool eats his own meat in this country.
But this is different. You can carry these tins with you in your saddlebags and not have to eat bacon and beans with every meal. We even have tinned peaches and tomatoes so you can have them in the winter.
Hey, I like peaches. You got any of those in there?
Enough of this chatter. Bull, put that tin down and go out to the stage and see what's in that strong box. We need to get out of here before anyone else decides to come visiting.
Please, let us live. Please. We won't tell anyone anything. I can make you happy. Just give me a chance.
Well, darling, I intend to give you that chance. With my dick. You can suck on it a little bit. Yeah, that'd be nice.
Bull walked into the room, a metal strong box looking small on his shoulder.
Here it is, boss.
Carlito.
Suarez walked to the box and drew his pistol.
Whoa, goddamn, Suarez, watch what you're doing.
Sorry, amigo. I aim a little better next time.
Sundance towed the box open with his boot, revealing a pile of letters and two canvas bank bags. He reached down and picked out the bags, holding them up in front of Cartwright. The kid drew his knife and slit them without a word, letting handfuls of greenbacks and double eagle gold coins fall to the floor.
Okay, boys, fun's over. Pack that dinero, saddle up some of those broncs out back, set fire to this place, and let's get out of here.
Hey, wait a minute. What about the women? I ain't finished here.
Hell, bring them along. We got plenty of horse flesh to carry them on.
Oh, no. No, please. Please don't.
Well, it's your choice, darling. We can leave you here if you want. Of course, I'd have to put a bullet in your brain.
Sundance started to leave, but then he hesitated and pointed over his shoulder at the shelves against the far wall.
Bull, before you torch this place, pack up any supplies we might need and bring them along. It might be a while before we get into town again.
Where are we headed, boss?
Why, north, of course. We're heading for Smoke Country. That got me a score to settle, boys, and I'm tired of waiting.
As the group mounted and rode off, no one noticed a small figure scramble out the back door of the burning building, her dress on fire.